At St. Jude, families never receive a bill for treatment, travel, housing, or food, because the only thing a family should worry about is helping their child live.
Because of you,
there is St. Jude.
The following program is intended for a mature listening audience. Graphic and explicit language may be heard at times. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of this station or sponsors. Listeners are advised that neither this station nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program, rebroadcast, redistributed or reused, without express written permission by host or producer is not allowed.
Hello and welcome to...
Sorry,
Mandy, didn't mean to step on you, but there you go. You want to announce us in? Or I know we've had some connection issues getting us rolling, but now that we're going, we're live.
If you want to intro us...
Can you hear me, Mark?
I can hear everybody, and we're live on the air. Hello and welcome to Cafe Enigma. Tonight we are talking about the Coral Castle. All right, and we have with us tonight our host, Mandy Brown, who's on the road trying to get home and then get back in here with us. And we have Christopher Wayne Fisher. Sarah Yosef is in here with us as well. And anybody else that I missed, let me know. Nope, that's about all we have right now. We probably have some more folks coming in on the way. But with that, because of all this, and we're waiting to take and get everybody in, let's roll the clip. We're going to I'm going to play an In Search Of clip, and here it is, the Coral Castle from In Search Of.
Hello? In Search Of has investigated the mystery of many ancient monuments, the pyramids, Stonehenge, and Easter Island. A solution to these puzzles may be concealed in Florida's Coral Castle. This monumental structure was created by one man with his bare hands in the 20th century. What strange forces created this castle of secrets?
This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations, but not necessarily the only ones, to the mysteries we will examine.
Coral Castle has been called the eighth wonder of the world. This place is a fantasy garden and an engineering marvel. The blocks are cut and set with great precision, locked without mortar. At 30 tons, the greatest single stone in Coral Castle is twice as massive as any in the pyramids. Here are massive megaliths, huge astrological symbols, and structures whose purpose is a total mystery. Surprisingly, 25 miles away is cosmopolitan Miami. Coral Castle was built not in ancient times, but in the 20th century. Most curious of all, Coral Castle was built in secret by one man, Edward Leedskalnin, a frail little hermit. With no modern machinery and with no help, he somehow hand-carved and lifted every single block, a total of 3 million pounds.
With all our modern technology, we might be able to duplicate the pyramids. But how could we ever do it with our bare hands? Dreamers beyond the fringe of science have postulated a long-lost art of harnessing anti-gravity. It seems incredible, but Ed Leedskalnin may have rediscovered these ancient secrets. Let's look at his life story.
The mystery of Coral Castle began in rural South Florida, just after World War I. Settlers and land speculators began to move down from the East Coast, displacing the indigenous Seminole Indians. The newcomers found a humid, sprawling tropical land, full of mosquitoes and opportunities. The great Florida land boom was on. In 1919, as recreated here, a real estate man named Moser was scouting land along back roads near the Everglades. He spotted a stranger. At first, he thought it was a boy and was surprised to encounter a very small grown man. The stranger couldn't weigh more than 90 pounds. Moser, always friendly, offered a ride. The little man introduced himself, Edward Leedskalnin. Recently immigrated from Latvia, he said with a smile. Was searching this part of Florida for a specific plot of land. Moser realized the little man had advanced tuberculosis. Mrs. Moser always welcomed the strangers her husband brought home. Life was lonely in this new land. Edward Leedskalnin was very friendly, very polite, and confessed outright he hadn't a penny to his name. The Mosers selflessly took young Ed into their home and nursed him back to health. They listened with respect to his story of leaving Latvia, of his search all over America for the right type of land. I'll know when I find it, he said. It's for my sweet 16. He would never explain who she was, but Ed was obviously haunted by a dream or a memory of land and a castle for his sweet 16. As soon as he regained his health, Ed continued searching the backcountry. Crazy Ed and his rusty bike became the butt of many local jokes. Neighbors, watching him prod the ground, began rumors that he was hunting for buried treasure. Ed always rejected the good farmland. When people wondered why, he only smiled. Finally, he excitedly brought Moser to a remote plot. Moser was astounded, for Ed had unerringly located the worst acre in the state. It was all bedrock, right up to the surface. You couldn't plow it, you couldn't farm it. Moser gladly gave a small section to his friend. A few weeks later, Moses' curiosity got the better of him. He dragged his wife out through the brush to see what Ed could possibly do with that land. They couldn't believe their eyes. Ed had somehow cut a 10-ton block of solid coral right out of the bedrock and hoisted it into the air. As they nervously approached his flimsy tripod and the block which could crush them in an instant, they realized there was something more than craziness in Ed. How did he do it? Ed smiled and said, "It's not difficult, really. The secret is in knowing how." Why did he do it? He smiled again. "Someday, my sweet 16 will come." Working alone, he cut more blocks. All the locals had to visit and gape at this accomplishment. Ed was friendly, but firm. He would never tell his secret techniques, and he would always stop work when people came near. Trying to catch him at work, the neighbors took to spying. Some people swear they saw the rocks move. Ed could somehow sense their inquiring gaze. He would simply stop working and patiently wait until they gave up trying to discover his secrets. Sixty years later, the completed coral castle still embodies a number of unsolved mysteries. Francis Wilson.
"This block weighs 9 tons. It's just one piece of rock. See what you can do with one hand?"
"He's quite interested in safety, I know that. And he always wanted to make sure the children couldn't get down in here, and that was his gate to keep children from going down the steps."
Those who knew Ed remember him with great respect. Charles Williams and Bodil Lowe.
"Guess I was maybe 6-7 years old. I was born and raised about 300 yards from this place, and I would see Ed quite often at the little country store we had, and he was a very slight man. I don't think he was probably any taller than I am. I'm about 5'6". Probably weighed somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 pounds. He always looked frail and sickly, but obviously very strong.
"He'd say this is because of the stars and the moon, and he would go on and he would show us his electrical machine, how he made electricity, and he would jump in his bathtub and show how the water would come to certain levels and how he heated it with the sun, and he'd always divert your question."
"As I say, a very gentle, kind person. And he was, of course, highly intelligent. Many people thought he was a little cracked because he was smarter, I think, than they were, probably."
"His whole life and whole being was very frugal. He just sustained himself, I think, more or less."
"And some nights we'd come in the moonlight and sit and walk around in his park. And he would come out and tell us his story if he had a small audience. And he would go along in a very normal sort of a voice. And then we'd ask him why he did it. And they'd say, 'Oh, well, someday my sweet 16 is coming.' And he'd look up in the stars and he would get very ethereal in his voice. And he just loved talking about his sweet 16.
"Then he always spoke of her as sweet 16. She never grew any older. It's kind of nice."
There were many rumors about mysterious Ed. One held that he was an eccentric miser and kept a stash of money. Late one evening in the 1930s, a band of toughs waited until he was alone in Coral Castle. Little Ed could never have imagined such a shocking intrusion into his private world. Prompted the most extraordinary feat of his life. Coral Castle was originally built in a remote area of Florida. For years, Ed Lead Scanlon felt safe in isolation, away from the harsh realities of the cities. He had carved this place with his bare hands as a Shangri-La for his sweet 16. Barely surviving a brutal robbery, however, Ed decided to seek safer ground. When he moved, Ed took more than his toothbrush. He took Coral Castle itself. He hired a local truck owner and, with characteristic secrecy, politely asked the man to step around the corner. The truck would be loaded in just a minute. Piece by piece, Ed moved all 3 million pounds of rock 10 miles to its present location near Homestead, Florida. As usual, no one ever managed to see how he lifted the giant rocks, which weighed up to 30 tons apiece. How did he do it? There are many theories. 60 million years ago, this was all of South Florida. Thousands of miles of living coral reef. The rock which he used, fossil coral, may have internal forces which only Ed understood. A huge brain coral seems almost conscious, perhaps contemplating ancient secrets. Living coral constructs its own undersea castles. Forces deep in the earth fuse dead coral into oolite, a dense, strong organic rock. And most of South Florida has little topsoil over this bedrock. We asked the men at a rock quarry to try an experiment, to cut and lift a giant block of oolite. With diamond-tipped power saws, the cutting alone took several hours. The only way to break the block free: brute force. Then the test. Could they detect any unusual buoyancy in the rock itself? Using a 600 horsepower crane, could they lift the rock? Almost tipped over, they managed to drag the block a few yards. What modern equipment would it take to duplicate Coral Castle?
It couldn't be done.
Charles Valois comments.
Not with the modern equipment. I wouldn't cut more than 4 foot long and 32 inches wide and 7 or 8 foot long. That's the most I'll cut. And you see the struggle I have getting it out with that machine.
This is the only known photo of Ed apparently working. Although he seems to be breaking the block free with wedges, a close look reveals that the block is already cut free, with a cable underneath. Engineers have been puzzled by this photo. Bruce Cathy has extensively studied and written on Earth forces. He believes that a harmonic grid inside the Earth's surface can create actual anti-gravity at certain nodes on the grid, and that Coral Castle was built on a position of harmonic resonance.
He's moved stones up to, or coral blocks up to 25 tons, and he'd put them up overnight just on his own. After he died, I checked some of the instruments he was using, and they're very, very primitive. Chisels and hammers and ropes and pulleys and things. Nobody can understand, even today, now how he'd done this. I found when I applied the harmonic mathematical basis to his position on the Earth's surface geometrically, that the same harmonic values popped up on the area where he was. He always said that he had the secrets of anti-gravity and magnetic fields, and he also said that he knew how they built the pyramids. So it appears if he was telling the truth that it looks like he did have these secrets.
Ed performed many strange experiments with magnetism, although he had no source of conventional electricity. He hinted to neighbors he was on the verge of a monumental breakthrough and published his preliminary results. His book, however, is as incomprehensible as Einstein's unified field theory. Just as Ed always worked in secret, he also preferred to take his own photographs, posing in his one suit with a self-timed box brownie. These films are not the best quality, but they are the only known movies of Ed Leedskalnin. They were discovered in 1980 in the back of a closet. They reveal the Ed that most visitors knew, animated, friendly, a simple man.
With this same simplicity, Ed awoke one morning in December of 1951. He put on his one suit, hopped a bus, and checked into Miami's county hospital. The doctors were appalled to find him near death from malnutrition. For a while, he rallied under their care, and then died quietly in his sleep.
Even after his death, Ed left a few surprises. Neighbors guarded the grounds until authorities could make an official investigation. Found his living quarters as Spartan and as ingenious as the rest of Coral Castle. They also found $3,800 in crisp $100 bills and what resembled a treasure map. All attempts to follow the directions on the map were futile. Nothing seemed to correspond to our normal three-dimensional geometry. Ed left many mysteries, a lot of money, and a castle for his sweet 16. Was she a real person, or was she a dream, an ideal of all that is good? Children love to visit Coral Castle. They instinctively respond to the childlike sense of play which is so magnificently sculpted here. In his life, Edward Leedskalnin carved and lifted over 3 million pounds of rock. Yet there is one small stone weighing 50 pounds which he never managed to lift. Ironically, on both sides of his simple grave in Miami are the graves of two little children. We think he would have felt at home.
You've just listened to In Search Of, hosted by Leonard Nimoy. This In Search Of was titled The Castle of Secrets. It first aired January 24th, 1981. And it came from Season 4, Episode 16.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Cafe Enigma. I'm still out on the road, so don't mind me, but that doesn't stop us from having our discussion and having fun here on Cafe Enigma, talking about our topic this week, which is the Coral Castle, continuing our Mysterious Happenings segment. So, the Coral Castle, I believe, is located in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's made up of moonlight, coral, stone.
Yeah, but it's a coral. It's a type of coral that after it spends time drying, this, that, and the other, becomes a type of bedrock. But yeah, it is still coral. Yeah, a limestone bedrock, yeah.
Right. And there are a lot of theories and supposition about... I'd heard a story about something about levitation, Mark, about the magnetic fields, the reversal magnetic fields being used for levitation with the creation of the Coral Castle. And I'm not... Again, this is just a story that I had heard, so I don't give any weight to it, but I find it to be an interesting story. Have you heard anything about it?
Well, what I've heard is some of the neighbors that were spying on Ed when he was building it swore that when he was building it and had cut some of these stones that... he created them to levitate, which gives the impression that he might know something about how to use anti-gravity, either scientifically or in a paranormal way.
Wow.
It's also located really close to Homestead Air Force Base, or Homestead, Florida.
Right. Wasn't there also some connection with the local ley lines as well? I've heard that ley lines can produce a lot of spiritual and paranormal activity. So couldn't that have tied into what happened with what the neighbor saw?
Well, as a geomancer, I would say that he might be able to tap some of that energy. I don't know if he could actually physically make it float, but he might be able to, you know, tap some of that energy to make it lighter, to work with it. But, you know, I would have had to been there, and I would have to understand a little bit better on his belief system and the mechanics that he was using, whether it was something, you know, taught from physics or something that is a paranormal way that his family did business when they were over in Latvia, because they were stone cutters and also lumberjacks. They cut trees down and moved a lot of them material that way. So we don't know if that's how they actually did it or if it was something that he learned outside of his family, or it was just a family kept secret. No one, he never really talked about that other than his sweet 16.
Wow.
Well, his sweet 16, wasn't that when his marriage fell apart the day before.
To everyone's knowledge, no one knew that, or that no one knew if he was even married or had a relationship with anybody else, other than some people speculate that the switch, the electric switch that he used in his machinery, had 16 switches on it. He could have been referring it to that, or some girlfriend he had over in Latvia or someplace else that he met. No one knows. And but everybody who ever listened to his story was caught and entranced by the story itself, because he made it sound like a real-life person that he was waiting for. And when he said that when he had finished building this coral castle, that, you know, it was for her and she would come.
Now, he didn't build this himself because he had shortened his own stature.
No, he had no help. He did everything himself. That is one of the mysteries about Coral Castle. And he did use, block and tackle, come-alongs, and other type of engineering apparatuses, you know, like a tripod and things like that, in his work, but they don't know exactly, because he did everything when no one was around. And there's only a few pictures of him around any of his equipment. And all the pictures that were taken of him were taken by him.
That's very odd. So he didn't have, like, any help whatsoever.
Plus, the man weighed 100 pounds or less and had advanced tuberculosis on top of it.
Now, because he had advanced tuberculosis, wouldn't he have been like 2 weeks, theoretically?
Tuberculosis lets you go through stages, and there are times when you get strong, but you never shake the disease, but it's still killing you. And then there are points where, you know, you're just so weak that you can't do anything because you're coughing and spitting up so much blood, either from your mouth or through your nose, from coming out of your lungs, that it makes you weak. But he actually died not from the tuberculosis. He died of malnutrition.
I thought it was from a few things, malnutrition, blood in his urine, and tuberculosis.
I'm sure everything was a factor. Which makes the feat of how he created everything even more amazing. The place where it's at now isn't the original site where he originally put the Coral Castle. It was actually at a different site, and because some gang of thugs came in and rolled him around and pushed him around, he decided to move to a different location. And when he did, he moved the whole complex to that other location.
And no one knows
how the trucks were loaded and unloaded either, because he always had the driver go around the corner and be in a place where they couldn't see it being loaded or unloaded, which is another mystery.
Right, because it just absolutely makes no sense. Do you think he had maybe like a police system where all he had to do was push it onto like a board, like something simple like that?
Well, I think the lightest.
And then he just placed it.
I think the lightest piece of masonry that he had was like 7 tons that he moved. So you're not going to push
lightest.
That. You're not going to push that around with just one hand, you know.
Well, obviously.
But you know, it's just amazing that the architecture itself is just so functional, as well as it's so unique compared to any other place in the world. In fact, it's considered the 8th wonder of the world, and it was deemed at as being one of the United States wonder.
Really?
Yeah. Which
that is so
which
that
makes
didn't come
it
up in my research.
Yeah, which even puts it above Woodhenge up in Maine or New Hampshire, up in that area, which is the American Stonehenge, but it's made out of woods. It's really interesting, all of this.
Sorry, my hands are full, so I can't mute.
That's all right. What do you think about all this, Chris?
I think Chris left us. We seem to be the only two on the call, Mark.
Oh, boy.
So I'm back. I've dozed off.
Eek! Don't do that. This is Cafe Enigma. You're supposed to stay awake and not eat during this show.
That's what I was doing, eating. I'm back. Everybody here?
Yeah, I hear you. I was wondering what your theories are and your ideas are on it. Since you're a huge history buff, what do you think, you know, maybe he had some secret techniques that he had learned or brought over from Latvia?
Yeah, probably from, since it has a very educated science community there. I began to find that to be the case.
Well, Tesla was from pretty close to the same region as he was from.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, and I didn't do any research on this, but maybe you could take and look it up real quick. Was Tesla alive during the same time that the Coral Castle was being built, and do you think that some of the ideas were shared back and forth, if they knew each other at all?
Well, I'll find out real quick. Tesla, see when he was born and stuff. Nikolai Tesla. What was that?
I'm still moving around.
Okay.
Hello?
I'm here.
I'm here too. I'm listening. And I can't do all the talking.
Yeah, he was born in 1856. He was alive about the same time. He was actually a bit older. And he was born in Smeton, Austria, back in the day. It would be in Croatia. So they probably didn't even know each other. That's like 1,000 miles away. That's closer to where my people are from.
It's still interesting, and both of them traveled around the United States extensively before any of this all happened. And even Tesla's work even came to light. So, you know, to me, there could have been a possibility that the two ran into each other. Just,
yeah,
you know.
I'd like to know that. That would be interesting if that happened.
Come on, Sarah, jump in with us.
Oh, Sarah.
Hi, guys.
What do you think, Sarah?
What do I think about what?
The Coral Castle. The mysteries, the enigma, the mysterious builder. Give us the lowdown on your thoughts.
Oh, boy. Well, he's a very interesting figure. I don't know how far along about his life you guys have already spoken about. Just from where I think I can pick up where... did you guys talk about the Sweet 16 yet?
Just a little bit.
We barely touched on it.
Okay. Well, basically before... we'll just call him Ed because I can't say his whole name 50 times. So so before Ed left Latvia, he... well, first of all, which is really interesting to me is... he grew up in a really poor family and only got like a fourth grade education. And then typically, you know, I don't know, for it doesn't say what exactly what reason they were. He was taken out of school, probably because they couldn't afford it, or he was put into an apprentice, you know, like the family business, the apprenticeship, because his father was a stonemason. So when he came of age, he went into stonemasonry and, you know, all that entails. And then by the time he was 26, he fell in love with a woman named Agnes Stufst. And she was 16, 10 years his junior. And then they were about to get married. And then the day right before the wedding, she backs out and he's heartbroken. And then after that, that's when he decided to emigrate to America and you know, start his new life, which then he arrived through New York. And then eventually he made his way over to the Pacific Northwest, where there was the big lumber boom within that area. And then according to a census, he actually became a... axe handle maker. So, which is interesting because that tells me, you know, people do, you know, there's a lot of things that come, you know, with axes. It's not a matter of just putting a stick on an axe head. I mean, there is a subtle, what do you call it? There's subtle physics at play when making a good axe handle because you're trying to, you're trying to regulate the force into the head, right? So that to me says that he was going to having a growing understanding of physics and how that sort of stuff works. And because of, you know, his eventual, because of his poor health, that's why he moved from Oregon to Florida, to where he ended up in Florida, which allegedly all the books say that he contracted the TB. So which to me is kind of iffy because he already has a history of poor health, and then whatever signs or symptoms he was contracting, you know, he had a bad cough. He was having blood in his sputum. And nowadays people see a blood in the sputum, they said, oh, it's TB. But there could be other factors of running that because his health was so bad. Because if you are a carrier for TB, TB is a type of a t- type of a infection where it can go into dormancy. So if he was a carrier for TB, he would have periods of where the infection was active and latent. So during the latent periods, that he would have to he would be asymptomatic. He would not have any symptoms, but unless he had an active TB infection, and usually they try to get on top of that really quick, especially in the it was about before the 1920s. So there wasn't that much in terms of drugs for the treatment of TB. So after his move to Florida, get into better climate to help his whatever his condition is where he met the real estate agent Moser and his wife, and according to the In Search of episode, it's his wife kind of nursed him back to health. So whether it's a possible that his TB was put back into a latent period or not, because if he had active TB, because the way TB is transmitted, it's through transmitted through things like it's aerosolized
it comes from the air.
Aerosolized particles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My grandfather actually had TB. It's some nasty stuff. My grandfather actually had TB. It's really nasty stuff.
Right. So it's aerosolized through the air. So coughing, sneezing, talking, everybody would have been became infected with TB. It's like nowadays we still have the TB testing, to see if we have those antigens within our system that they make us, do at least once in a lifetime. So he ends up going down to Mr. Moser, who has a bunch of land, and he's planning to go and make it into different tracts to sell off as real estate. And then here comes Ed, and so some reports said that he was actually using a divining rod when Mr. Moser found him, picked him up. Whether he was searching for water or searching for the ideal track to, build his new house. Now, I mean, and it's amazing to think, with the way Coral Castle is built, you would think for a stonemason, he would be like a big, hefty, a big, with big muscles and a guy. And this guy was like extremely slight and short. So he weighed like 100 pounds sopping wet, and he was only like 5 foot, maybe 5'1", 5'2". And that's part of why, it seems incredulous of the things like the big structure with all the tonnage that goes into Coral Castle. It seems inexplicable, especially, with given how secretive he is. So going back to the story. So Ed goes around and he takes his, divining rod or stick, and he's testing every area of Mr. Moser's tracks, and he's passing up, all the farmland, and he ends up picking like the worst property in the area, which is mostly made of bedrock. So at this point, nobody knows what he's going to do. They think he's crazy for building a home, because the initial, the typical thing that was done back then was you would pick a house, set it down, and build your garden or a farm or whatever it is. So that's where, he eventually started in secret building his sculptures for the Coral Castle, which is which was located in Florida City, Florida. So he starts sort of building his coral. He starts building some of the structures in there, and you know, of course, people are curious. You know, I have neighbors who are always trying to get up on what we're trying to do or what we're doing, and with the kind of, you know, quiet and secretive type of man Ed was. You know, he only worked at night with minimal lighting he generated from himself. He's kind of off the grid, a bit, you know, a bit of an odd duck socially. I mean, even though he was just, you know, really quiet, and even though he would be nice to people and allow them to tour his place for, I guess they call them give them the literal 10-cent tour of what he's working on, and being all enigmatic about why he's doing it, what he's doing, why he's doing it. It sort of lends to the mystery. So while he's in Florida City, you know, eventually the area becomes more and more developed, and where you know, more people are coming in, building houses, and there was an alleged altercation that the In Search of episode references, that he was attacked because some local thugs or whatever thought he had a bunch of cash, you know, lying around it in his house, and was trying to get him. But whether that was the reason, or another theory was that it was in reference to actually ley lines, where the news site, which was 10 miles above north of Florida City in Leisure City, where eventually he moved his structures over on, you know, secretly onto the truck into the news site, which would later become Rock Gate, and then a Rock Gate Park. And the name of Coral Castle was not actually made official until 2011, which I thought was really, really late. So, I mean,
that, yeah, it was.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was more recent. But I mean, it's interesting all around, and even if you consider the dedication, the man work, that goes into all of his structures and stuff, you can also see his personality laid into it. You know, like he has a throne like chair, you know, for whether it's for himself, or a heart shaped table, or a table that's shaped like well, Florida, and then his love of astronomical signs, because I think he said he had a Polaris telescope and several different planets carved into there. It's like he has a moon, a Saturn, Mars, a rock pool that illustrates, you know, different phases of the moon. It's all very interesting, and you know, it probably just goes to his interests in sort of the whole lens to that sort of paranormal mystique of what he was doing.
Yeah, so, it makes it really interesting. It makes it really interesting, but we can pick up on that. Mark? We can pick that up when we come back from break, but we have to go to break now. So with that, this is Cafe Enigma, and we'll be back after the top of the hour.
For America's wounded warriors, sometimes coming home can be a battle in itself. Every one of them needs our support to meet the challenges they face every day. The USO provides Americans a way to offer that support to our wounded warriors and their families. Join us. Visit USO.org to learn how you can make a difference in their lives. The USO, until everyone comes home.
all over Moscow, down to Gorky Park, listening to the wind of change. An August summer night, soldiers passing by, listening to the wind of change. We could be so close, like brothers. The future's in the air, can feel it everywhere. I'm blowing with the wind of change.
I can feel the change in the wind. right now. Nothing's my way, and they're not gonna hold me down no more. No, they're not gonna hold me down, 'cause I've got faith of the heart.
Welcome back. We are here at the top of our Cafe Enigma. And if you are just joining in, we are continuing our Mysterious Happenings segment with the Coral Castle. And we left off with Miss Sarah giving us copious amounts of information about Edward and his amazing coral castle that he had built seemingly by hand, by himself, while suffering some major severe illnesses that he shouldn't have been physically able to do. Hence the mystery. So, Sarah, do you want to continue with your copious amounts of information?
Okay, let's see. So, let's talk a little bit about the castle itself. So
you were saying something about the his love of astronomy.
Yeah. He some of the half of the structures within the coral castle are astronomy based, such as there's a pool that illustrates the different phases of the moon. He has a working sundial, which, you know, tells pretty good time, you know, within 2 minutes. So that's so, and he also has a Polaris telescope inside one wall. So Polaris meaning the North Star. So he has a it's like a giant brick, not brick, wall facing the North Star constantly. So there is definitely a sort of love of either astronomy or astrology that he is displaying at the Coral Castle. Whether it's more on the mystical side or not remains to be seen. He also has different other different objects, such as an obelisk. I was talking with David earlier in the break, and saying that there were some allusions that the move towards the move of Coral Castle from Florida City to Leisure City could be based off of a theory on geomantic purposes, such as utilizing the use of ley lines, which is an interesting possibility. But it definitely, Coral Castle is definitely a labor of love, because if you think about all the different types of objects that are within the Coral Castle, you know, he has a table set for a heart, a throne, whether, you know, that's supposed to be ecocentric or not, who knows. He created a space where you know, he had several he had like over a dozen rocking chairs. So he created a space that was sort of inviting, and it speaks of the heart, especially with with the amount of work and, you know, blood, sweat, and tears it takes to carve everything, you know, by hand, by yourself, you know, at night. It's definitely a labor of love. And something that has withstood, you know, the test of time, much like he wished his love with Agnes probably did, which it didn't. I mean, that structure is amazing in that everything is sort of fitted together. There's no glue, you know, no cement or glue holding all his stone structures together, and it's all based on the careful balancing of each piece's own weight, such as even if you look at the door, which was this huge, massive slab, and it amazes you. You know, with the lightest of touch, you could get it to open. Think how empowering that is. I mean, to touch a door, and you all of a sudden you have like 20 tons of rock just move with the barest of effort. I mean, as far as physics is concerned, it's a marvel. I mean, it's a marvel that he was able to balance out the physics just right to get everything to work.
I think one of the most mysterious things about Ed and that whole Coral Castle is how many books he published on magnetism. But yes, a lot of the books are written in a way that you just can't understand them. Now, I'm wondering, you know, with way we have new math now, we talk about quantum geometry and quantum mathematics and things like that. I'm wondering if now we can solve some of and understand some of the things that he was trying to explain in those books now. which I would find quite interesting.
Right, because from what I've read, I've actually tried to look up the things he's written online in preparation for this show, and he has a totally different theory. He doesn't really follow what we consider the modern theory of electromagnetism. He goes on his own tangent. He relies on principles based on reverse magnetism. Being able to manipulate in reverse magnetism, you have the ability to manipulate the poles of a magnet. So, like, say if up is north and down is south, he would be able to through the use of a strong magnet, he would be able to manipulate that through some sort of magnetism. Another thing to consider, though, I mean, the type of material that he's using is that oolite limestone, which is not very heavily magnetized. There are some cases I know in Arkansas where the type of oolite limestone over there has some elements are based on hematite, have lots of hematite inside them, which also gives it its distinctive red color. But that, from the one that was used in Florida City, it's not as similar. It doesn't seem like there's a high hematite content. Now, the way that particular rock is formed is you have like either a grain. It's similar to like how you obtain a pearl or a yogurt-covered raisin. I always think of it as yogurt-covered raisins. But it's like you take a grain of material, and then on the outside is you have a growing a shell is grown of calcium carbonate. So, and then they form like these pebble marble type round objects called oolite, which is also called egg rock. It's a type of, because they all look like little eggs. So that is sort of cemented down and over millions and millions of years into a type of limestone. So where is it? So based on that type of let's see, what is this? Yeah, calcium carbonate. Okay, so as far as obtaining that sort of material, it's not as hard as you would think, because on the Mohs hardness scale, it's around 3 or 4, and 1 being the softest material, which is like talc, and the hardest being 10, that's diamond. So 3 or 4 on the Mohs hardness scale, that's between copper and the hardness that you have on your nails. The material is more brittle than glass. So, I mean, it would be easily to remove. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, despite, the tonnage, it's amazing to me that he has such a knowledge of physics. You know, he was able to do it through either a simple or complex pulley system, based on, secret photographs that people take of him while he's working, of how he's able to maneuver these objects. So it's amazing. But and also the fact that he does it in secret, it also gives rise to the whole conspiracy theory of, what's going on. I mean, the whole paranormal aspect of it seems, a little bit far-fetched. Is it, oh, through watching through the bushes or whatever it is that it seems like he's levitating blocks or, with a finger or or he's manipulating geomantic forces to do his will. I mean, a lot of it is also, you know, wild speculation. So, but there are, you know, some, I think a couple of his friends and some people, one of which, what is his name? Orville Irwin, who is a friend of his, he wrote the book, Mr. Kant is Dead, The Story of Coral Castle, which gives the explanation of how it was done. Now, I didn't have time to actually look at the book, but, it's really more of a romanticized and, fantasized, the mystery of it, just because people don't know. It's a really big mystery.
It sure is an interesting topic. You know, this topic has come up in past shows. When I first started this show, one of the main things that would come up as a side topic would be Coral Castle. How can this, you know, how could this person, how was he able to create and accomplish such a feat in such a short period of time? Because he had a regular job on top of this, you know, and he was doing this at night. So when did he sleep? Was he an alien? The more I think about it, the more he sounds alien like, you know, or superhuman that doesn't need the amount of rest or this, that, the other than a regular human at the time, and especially with one who had, you know, all the ailments he had.
Right.
It just, you know, it's kind of mind-boggling.
Blows your mind. I mean,
very mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that being said, you know, I know personally many people who have many illnesses who do stuff that they're not supposed to be doing, but they do it anyway just from sheer willpower because they set their mind to do it and they want to do it that badly.
Right.
You know, so couldn't it have just been the same thing that, you know, that's what they want to do?
It's very possible. And he was fiercely poor of taking care of himself. Like he just barely ate to survive, as to, you know, we could sit down and we enjoy stuff. He was very conservative. You know, he wasn't somebody who, you know, spends willy nilly. Not that he had the ability to. I mean, when he moved from his place in Florida City to Leisure City, he raised his tour rates. I mean, he went from 10 cents to a quarter. So, I mean, a dime from a quarter, you know, just to go off with the standard of living, which, you know, it was still amazingly, after he died, when they were, you know, they went to his friends or went to his house to get his, you know, last stuff and everything, they found $3,500, which back then, you know, that's a fortune. And he still chose to live the way he chose to live, you know. So, I mean, he probably, people that probably didn't think about it while he was alive, but he had the means to live like other people, but he chose not to. Which, you know, I wouldn't mind living there either if I knew I could get hot water and Wi-Fi. I mean, I wouldn't mind that, but it's, you know, what people are willing to endure and what his priorities were. You know, he was extremely focused on creating the Coral Castle, whether it was to, you know, the way people kind of focus on their art and ignore everything else, or he was whether he was trying to either honor or get away from his life experiences, or if some people like to romanticize that he was that much in love with Agnes, he suffered for his love for all that time. It's a sad thing to consider. I mean, because I saw anywhere that, that he had a wife or a girlfriend, or, he's just singularly focused. So, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, he was able to balance the door into the gate with such precision that it could move so easily. Because he has such an understanding of physics and, centers of gravity and centers of mass and
really amazing, because the man never really finished school. He was like, right, Tesla and Einstein. None of those guys ever finished school.
Right.
Which makes me wonder, what did we lose between then and now,
mm-hmm,
in genius?
Right. Well, I mean,
I don't think we've lost anything. I think you're wrong, Mark. I don't think we've lost anything. I think that the only difference between then and now is that we're lazy. We don't put our minds to hardly anything. And everything that I think that we're the same as we were back then. We just don't put our minds to anything. I mean, this man has demonstrated love and passion and dedication for long amounts of time, and changing his entire lifestyle for this one goal, this one task. And you don't see that kind of passion anymore. And I think that's
at least not in our society. Now, there's other cultures and other ways of thinking all around the world, and that kind of genius still isn't, being projected from other folks from those gene pools. So what's going on?
I think it's there. I think it's not being used.
Well, you have to.
Well, I can understand. I can understand if, in the way we look at things in this Western culture, but Western culture doesn't make up the majority of the world. Okay. There are other ways of thinking. I mean, in other cultures and other ethnic ways of doing things that aren't the way we do things here in the West. So, the things that always gets me is scratching my head is, even though it's not here, surely there's something going on somewhere else in the world even though we take things lazy, there are other cultures, ethnic backgrounds, as well as, other ways of thinking compared to the way we are, that aren't lazy. Because, overall, the whole world isn't going to be lazy. You have different groups throughout the world doing these things. But what's really interesting is Einstein came from Germany, as well as Tesla came from, around the same area, not close or nearby, but same general area of Europe, as did Ed. And all these guys, in a way, are Ed wasn't considered a genius, but the way, he did his excavations as well as his planning, that is genius.
Personally, I mean, as I would like to split the difference between you two and what I believe. I mean, I don't think it's more a matter of culture as a matter of personality, because even though he had a fourth grade education, he loved learning. He loved reading. He had the drive to, you know, observe, you know, he paid attention to everything around him, whether, you know, he was learning his stonemason craft from his father to, you know, going out on his own, understanding how physics affect each other. You know, when he was doing his time as a axe handle maker, I mean, that all takes some understanding of physics, and it's going to be trial and error. So, I mean, it was all, you know, practical learning. It's more not a matter of being book smart. It's practical experience. So, I mean, fourth grade education, that will probably get him through maybe the, you know, your arithmetic portion of it, his understanding. And then all that is going to be coming from experience, whether it came from his father, whether it's, you know, trial and error from people he learned here in the States or wherever. He was able to take all that knowledge and put it into in a productive and beautiful way of expression.
Yeah. I don't know how to come back any other way, but yeah, okay. That works.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's another thing, too. All of the power that was used to create this coral castle.
Coral.
Was done with DC power. It was done by stringing up and connecting car batteries together with one generator, and he had, I believe it was wind power and some other things that when it was all said and done, it created like a perpetual energy machine.
Right.
So, and he lit everything up with old car lights at night to do his work, which is another interesting thing too. You know, car lights at the time, they didn't take a lot of power. And even if you have something that's, you know, recharging that battery with the generator, you're never going to run out of power. And you don't have to be on the grid at all. And no one's, you know, you can be as far out in the middle of nowhere to do this or, you know, right in town if you wanted to do the same thing. So.
And what's interesting is I think it's also a testament to his poor background because, like you say, he used the car batteries. He used, for the main door, he used an old truck axle, you know, as the pivot point, or, you know, through the doorway. He used materials that nobody else wanted. I mean, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yeah, and even even the iron door that he had put in the castle itself, that was actually the saw.
Right.
That he used to cut the stone with, which is really interesting.
Right. And it's you know, again, it's that out-of-the-box thinking and using what you have. I mean, when you come from an environment where you don't have a lot, or, you know, it's not a matter of going to the store, you make do. And in certain ways, that, you know, leads to different forms of creativity and innovation, and it pushes it forward. So, I mean, he couldn't just, you know, go out and get like a hinge. So he made one out of a truck axle, which is all, you know, which is an amazement to me in itself.
Well, you know? Even the tub that he had was solar powered.
Mm-hmm.
And it had special levers, and that it would only fill to a certain point and drain. It's literally amazing.
It is. It is. I mean, nowadays we use tools that we don't really understand. I mean, what understand about craftsmanship. I mean, nowadays things in our culture, if it breaks, you know, you get another one versus, you know, understanding the mechanics behind it. You know, the things were built to last back then as opposed to now, which is sad. You know, it's a different, yeah. Total different way of thinking.
Yeah, quality of production completely gone down in today's day and age, because right. It's more about money in the pocket than it is about quality of product and being proud of what you've produced.
Yeah.
Which is how it was back then.
I mean, just think of the craftsmanship. I mean, they said that the Coral Castle survived a Hurricane Andrew. And I mean, how many houses can you say can survive a hurricane, you know, based on, you know, whether the type of material or, you know, whatever.
Well, I would actually move in there, because something that has 7-ton blocks and cuts of stone, that's going to be a whole heck of a lot better to be in and around than being in, what is it, 4x4 pine or oak or whatever. You know, that when the wind blows, man, it could snap it and blow you away. You ain't going to get blown away with rock like that.
I should hope not. I mean, that's be a pretty bad stone. So I'm not sure you specifically could move in unless if there is a large amount of hematite in that rock, you might be in trouble, Mark.
Yeah, it'll just crack in three places, so I don't need to worry about that. But anyways, it doesn't like me.
But speaking of the geomantic aspects, so I mean, what about geomancy? So,
well, I talked about that earlier in the show before you came in, and I believe that he could have used geomancy to plot it, the whole area out, possibly even lighten if he had advanced knowledge of techniques and things that were passed down through the generations in his family, but not levitate. I don't believe he could levitate, but who knows? You know, there. It is.
It could be a psychokinetic thing.
Yeah, but I think that if anything, mind over matter, he might be able to do like some sort of equivalency where it actually makes the rock or the material that he's working with seem or be lighter, okay, by putting a field around it, okay, and then, you know, kind of like when spiritualists and that, you know, we're cleansing an area, so we're going to use our energy and we're going to push everything out. It would work in a very similar way to that if he had advanced knowledge of how to do that. Or just, you know, a really good understanding and working relationship in doing that. And had done that in the past before even starting this kind of work. So that to me is quite possible, but I, you know, levitation. When I think of levitation, I think of Harry Houdini and smoke and mirrors. Okay,
right.
And I'm not saying it's impossible or improbable, but I would have to see the technique, be shown it, and given a little bit of explanation of how it works, right. You know, from the person doing it, then, you know, because one thing about this show is that, yeah, we do talk about some odd and strange things, but the gist of it is, go out, look up the information, dig it up, and see what you can find. Even if it's in black and white and people swear by it and say that that's the real thing, it doesn't always mean that that's real. A lot of times, just like before when the world was told to be round, okay, and everybody that said that the world was round was considered heretics because everybody else thought it was flat and that everything else evolved and revolved around our world and not us revolving and evolving around the sun and this solar system, okay?
Copernicus.
So, yeah. Over time things will change. But it's still, if you want the knowledge, you have to go out and dig it up.
Right.
And find out for yourself, and what's your truth? What's your perception that you can look at and say, okay, yeah, I can believe this. This is how it is. I can touch it, feel it, smell it, whatever. Or my faith says that that's okay, and I'll believe in it, and I'm fine with this explanation. That's something about being human. Other creatures out here on our planet don't have that.
So hear that, part of reasoning. You be trailblazers and trendsetters.
Yep. And with that, I'm going to take us to our last break, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap this up. What do you think about that, Mandy?
I agree completely.
All right. With that, we'll be right back after our last break.
Young people everywhere are making a difference.
Special Olympics has changed my life.
What I'm doing is for a great cause.
And it's not about disabilities, but it's about celebrating their abilities.
I've made a difference. Now it's your turn to make a difference.
Get involved at SpecialOlympics.org.
If you're a veteran looking to file for your service-connected benefits through the Department of Veterans Affairs, don't go it alone. AMVET's highly trained service officers stand ready to walk you through the process at VA regional offices around the country, helping you to navigate the complex VA system free of charge. With new presumptions for age and Orange exposure and other conditions, AMVETS can offer you the advice you need to finally receive all of your earned benefits. In 2009 alone, AMVETS helped process more than 65,000 claims and appeals, securing more than $410 million in benefits. To find your nearest AMVETS service officer or to learn more, visit AMVETS.org.
We'll be right back.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the end of our show. I can't believe it's the end of the show already, Mark.
Oh, yeah. I mean, time flies when you're having fun, or Sarah's talking for us. Thank goodness for that, because, you know, I really didn't have it tonight.
I know, but, like, this show is, like, awesome. And Sarah, you had amazing information tonight, and it ended up being a really cool topic. So it was really, really cool. I enjoyed it. Did you guys enjoy yourselves?
I did. I even ate pistachios while we were on air. I loved it. Why are you guys laughing? What's so funny about pistachios?
That's so comical, just the way you say it. You say it so matter-of-factly.
It is.
Yeah, I just say pistachios.
Yeah, with some corn chips and Doritos and a peanut butter sandwich. But anyways, now you all know that I snack during the show. Thank you very much. You can get a hold of these folks by going to... how do we get a hold of you, by the way? Sarah? And don't say through me.
Well, I mean, all of my hate mail is going through you, so might as well. So you can probably contact me through Mark Watashek through Dragus Productions. And I think that's where we can get Mandy as well, right?
Yep. And you can also find me and Mark at the Dominion Ministry. .org because we are board members there. You can find me at facebook.com/Kamina320. That's KAMIANAE 320. You can find me on LinkedIn, and I think that's just about it.
Mark, how can
we find Chris?
You can get a hold of Chris on Facebook under Christopher Wayne Fisher, or you can get a hold of him through me at dragusproductions@gmail.com, or you can look Mandy and me up on the dominionministry.org, or, you know, there's just look up Dragus Productions. You'll find us. And all the other wonderful shows that I do and produce, and yeah, that too. Anyways,
eat pistachios through.
I don't eat pistachios on just any show. All right.
Oh, only our show?
No, just
only
tonight.
Our show is worthy of
just
pistachios.
Tonight. Just tonight, it was worthy. Yes.
Oh wow.
Tonight's show was worthy of pistachios on Cafe Enigma. Along with my cafe, which was a double mochaccino with a shot of hazelnut in it. So it was in a frappe.
You're making it sound so basic. I just have a straight up black tea.
In a frappe frothed with all sorts of goodness. And a cherry on top.
Yeah, you definitely made my drink sound so basic. I just have a straight up black tea.
I've been doing this for so long. I treat myself very well. And over time, you will learn to do this too.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with my black tea with ice.
Yeah, I'll stick with my Earl Grey.
How many squirrels does it take to make gray squirrel tea? I mean, Earl Grey tea.
One. To stir the cup.
To stir the cup. Awesome.
Yep.
So, does anybody have any... outside of that, does anybody have any conjecture? Some last-minute thoughts on the topic? And... Mandy, why aren't you picking up and doing this instead of me?
Well, I have one thing I'd like to say. Everyone should stay tuned for next week's topic. We're going to be talking about the Titanic and the mysteries concerning its demise.
I will tell you all, the ship still sinks. We can't change that. All right.
Yeah, we're not changing that at all.
We cannot change that. The ship still sinks, folks. But we can talk about all the other things that go around it, though. So with that, I'm going to take us out because I think we've had enough fun for the night. All right.
Never fun.
Oh yeah.
Somebody had so much too much fun coffee.
Who's coughing?
Come back on his sugar.
So with that, we'll be back next week and talking about the Titanic. And that's what Mandy said that we're going to do. And that's how we're going to do it. So good night, folks. Okay.
Our revels now are ended. These, our actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which inherit it shall dissolve, and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
Thank you.